No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast, your Arizona Cardinals podcast hosted by myself, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com. I'm one of the sites of the USA Today NFL Wire. My co-host is Seth Cox from AvengeTheBirds.com, SB Nation's SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals website, and also the co-host of the NFL Breakdown, Draft Breakdown podcast. And we come to you after a very, very disappointing loss. So we've got lots to talk about. Seth, how's everything going?
Oh, you know, it's interesting, different, not where any of us expected it to be.
Now, the question now is, no disrespect at all to our faithful listeners, is anyone going to be listening to this show and reading our websites anymore? Because are there going to be any Cardinal sites left? Because it's, yeah.
I mean, it's draft season. That's basically all it boils down to.
Draft season? What are you talking about? The Cardinals are still in it, and we're going to talk about that. The Cardinals still in it. Like, what are you talking about? I declared the Cardinals dead after week 8. But no, they're still in it. I mean, it's still possible. So we can pretend that somehow. But anyway, the Cardinals are coming off a very, very disappointing loss in Miami against the Dolphins, 26-23, where they were washed away and their playoff hopes were washed away with the torrential rain and the turnovers and the missed field goals and the blocked kicks and the bad special teams and the inability to cover anyone outside of Patrick Peterson, and just kind of a little bit of everything. No real pass rush, no passing game, just David Johnson and Jermaine Gresham and Patrick Peterson. That's about it. So we got a lot to talk about. That's not necessarily the funnest stuff. So we're going to talk about the loss. Were there any positives to it? So 26-23 loss, they fall to 5-7-1. We're going to talk, are there any positives? We're going to talk about all the stupid stuff that happened, all the yuck. We're going to talk about some of what Bruce Arians, head coach Bruce Arians, talked about, some strong comments following the game, roster moves that were recently made because there's a bunch of injuries, and the unfortunate news that we got from Michael Floyd. We'll even talk about their playoff chances because they're still in it. Heck, they could still win the division. And we'll look ahead to the New Orleans Saints. But before we get started, let's let you know that this episode of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast is brought to you by FanEssentials.net, where you and your favorite sports fan can get their team's gear delivered, their own team's gear delivered directly. I can't talk today. My goodness. FanEssentials.net, where you can have your team gear delivered to your house monthly, right to your door. You don't have to go find it. Perfect for you as a sports fan, whether you're a Cardinals fan or a fan of any other NFL or even NBA or Major League Baseball team. It makes a great gift this time of year. You know, a sports fan. Get them FanEssentials.net, and they will have Cardinals gear or Raiders gear or whatever team gear delivered to their doorstep every single month. And with plans starting at $34.99 every single month, it's a great deal. And for our faithful listeners, for you guys, we have a deal for you if you want to test it out. Again, FanEssentials.net, you can use the promo code CRED and get 15% off. Off of your first month of it to test it out and see what you think. Again, FanEssentials.net for all the essentials you need as a sports fan. So if we've reached the inevitable, got to talk about this loss. So first, was there anything positive we could come out of that game? 26-23. I mean, you look at some of the stats. You know, they were even in time of possession. Both teams 31% in third down conversion. Cardinals had 300 yards of offense, gave it 314 yards of offense. They were only penalized 7 times to the Dolphins 14 times. They were more efficient in the red zone and in goal to go. But ultimately, a 26-23 loss. Was there anything that we could get out of that was positive?
I think you can take some things away. The fight back I thought was great. You know, I thought they did an okay job of playing through obviously adverse conditions. I mean, from there, you know, I don't know. I mean, it was one of those games where, despite the putrid play on the field, they somehow were in it late. You know, J.J. Nelson touched the ball 2 times and scored 2 touchdowns.
He's on David a streak. Johnson, 3 touches?
Yeah.
3 touchdowns.
Exactly. David Johnson looks, you know, great every week. I just – you add in the fact that they had to put 3 guys on IR afterwards. They made a change at the punting position. Like, it was clearly the bottoming out of this, you know, kind of fall that has been the 2016 season. So I think it's kind of hard to find positives to take away from it outside of the fact that you didn't see the guys quit, which I thought was a positive. And, you know, you know that you have key players in important spots. You know, hopefully DJ Humphreys gets healthy at left tackle and we can see a little more of him. David Johnson is a star. Patrick Peterson is probably the best cornerback in the NFL right now. You have key pieces. The question becomes, what do you have around them?
And for me, there are a couple of things. Obviously, David Johnson continues to impress. Miami, for whatever it was, whether it was rain or whatever, were able to really kind of eliminate the receivers completely. David Johnson was a positive. In fact, you know, Jermaine Gresham was a mixed bag because he had 2 drops. He had the taunting penalty. But for the 3rd game in a row, he's got 5 catches. And, you know, it looks like they're finally – that the offense, that they're finally realizing the weapon he can be, very physical, reliable for the most part. And then their rush defense was fantastic. I mean, Jay Ajayi, who'd been, you know, the world beater, they held him to 48 yards on 20 carries. Patrick Peterson was insanely good. And like you said, the fight back to get back into the game – is something we didn't see in other road games as much. You know, Buffalo, they fell apart. You know, they tried to come back. We kept turning the ball over. Minnesota, they didn't. Atlanta, they came, it kind of fell apart in the middle of the game, so they fell too far behind. And so it was good to see them, you know, because at the beginning of the game, it was Buffalo all over again. And the Cardinals have to, we've talked about this, I don't know how many times the last couple of years, the Cardinals have to get off to a good start for their game plan to work. They got behind early with the turnovers and the deficit, and they managed to, and it looked like, really, it looked like they were going to win. When they tied the game, and Matt Moore's in the game, I'm thinking, hey, they're going to win this. But then, you know, that fateful final drive where Palmer, you know, dropped the ball, just ball fell out of his hands and they got behind. So they had to punt and then came back with the problems in coverage. And even then Miami still screwed up. I heard a great description of it. You know, the Cardinals played a terrible game, but they were outdone by how badly they played only by the Dolphins, who played even worse. and they still managed to win the game. Both teams, that was putrid football to watch, especially in the beginning. You know, people love smash mouth football and the range. Like, it's very ugly football. Teams shouldn't be fumbling all over the place and things like that. But outside of that, really not much in the positive. And there's a lot of stupid stuff to talk about.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like you look at it overall, and I think if you dissect the game really closely, you can come up with a lot. Not a lot, but you can come up with a good amount of positives to come from. But I thought the fact that, like you said, they fought back, they had the recognition that this was it. And I really do think that they saw that. You've seen it in the fallout post game from a number of different ways. And so I think the guys all knew this was it. Like, if they lost this game, the season was over. They're going to play out the string, and I'm assuming they're going to play hard, but you know, the season itself was lost. So to see that was encouraging, to see them, you know, have the fiery intensity that you've kind of seen post game is encouraging. But I just, the play on the field hasn't matched up the bravado, and the paper champion type thing that we kind of expected when the season was starting and underway. You know, we overlooked all the flaws of the preseason with, oh, it's the preseason. And, you know, those kind of have spilled over into the regular season. They have very little depth in terms of the offensive line play. Now, that's not completely unexpected when you lose, you know, three starters, but it's showing when you're picking guys like Ehrlich John and John Wetzel over draft picks like Earl Watford and Cole Toner and Evan Baim to even, you know, go a step further. And so it all is becoming one kind of big, weird season that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, another thing that they ran across, it's their health. They just, not only have they had been disappointing play on the field, but they have been ravaged by injuries. You know, they had some key injuries a year ago, but they just can't manage to just quite stay healthy, whether it's Tyrann Mathieu or Tyvon Branch or Chris Johnson. You have Jerron Brown. All these lesser-known players you have, you know, they're special teams guys. Jerron Brown goes down. Ifeanyi Momah goes down. Alani Fua goes down. You know, Kareem Martin's out for several weeks. And so you're having these issues on spending, you know, even Alex Okafor got hurt for a bit. And, you know, now you're hitting the three more players land on injured reserve. Now, and this is kind of the time of year where players land on injured reserve because there's no games to save them for later. But when they're losing starters, well, starters now, Ulrich John done, Tyvon Branch done, Deon Buchanan done. These are some just ridiculously, it's almost to the point of absurdity, the number of injuries that they've suffered over the course of the year. It's just been everything. It's literally been this year. Everything that could go wrong has gone wrong, as opposed to last year with, you know, everything that could go their way did. This year, everything. So they missed a kick here, there, a bad snap here, there, bad call goes their way. Then people get hurt. It's just everything has gone against it. It's almost as if all of that quote unquote luck that they've had, you know, people look at stats and they see how successful teams are in close games. They see that as rather anomalous because, you know, close games tend to be sort of luck. And like this year was the undoing of that. That was where everything balanced out. Let's start with some specifics. I mean, I don't know where to start. Kicking game. What is up with the kicking game? I mean, we replaced Kieran McCanaday, because he was not good. Aaron Brewer's been steady, and then suddenly he's making bad snaps. Drew Butler, the reliable holder, you know, Arians was quick to criticize, was critical of Butler after looking at the film and on that on the one that got blocked. He should have just picked it up and run with it or tried to throw a pass rather than attempt the kick and get blocked. Kenton Zara, I don't know what is up with him. Has he just gotten into his head? You know, he had the one missed kick earlier, the week one missed kick, and then from there, did things just sort of fall apart? What's there to say about the kicking game? Because it's been very sad to see.
I think it starts with the players, and then I think it you know, permeates to management. You know, at some point you have to pull the trigger, and you look at it and kind of, like you said, the writing was on the wall for last season with Drew Butler. And they continue to show loyalty to them or to him, despite the fact that he was statistically the worst punter in the NFL. You know, but they
kept, and at best, what you could call him is inconsistent.
Yeah. And they kept reaching back to 2014. Oh, look what he did in 2014. Well, you know, look what Carson Palmer did in 2015. What does that have to do with what he's done in 2016? And that's where I struggle with a lot of these takes that have come from the team themselves is, you know, well, look at this. Well, what's happening or what happened in the past has nothing to do with what's happening in the present. And, you know, and how you grade for the future. And that's kind of where we're at with the special teams. We were continually sold on the idea that, you know, Drew Butler was good in 2014. He was hurt in 2016, so he should be fine again in 2016 once he's healthy. And then, you know, it just, again, it continually got worse. I don't blame them for the long snapper thing, because that's what a lot of teams do. You try out young players and you pick the best one. I will say it does go to the idea of scouting and being able to identify talent if in that instance. So the route they went wasn't necessarily the wrong route, but the fact that they obviously missed on it was wrong. And then the kicking game is just one of those things, you know, like kickers lose it fast. I mean, we saw it with the idiot kicker in Indianapolis. You know, we've seen it with kickers in Arizona. Yeah, we've seen it with kickers in Arizona. You know, obviously, more recently, we've seen it with Blair Walsh in Minnesota. I mean, kickers come and go. They're you know, the good ones stay around forever. Adam Vinatieri, obviously Stephen Gostkowski and Stephen Hauschka and
Sebastian Janikowski.
Sebastian Janikowski, exactly. But it's hard. But the rest of them are all interchangeable, right? Like, there's not. And when they're on a good streak, you ride them until that good streak ends, and then you find the next one. And just it feels like that the decisions made on special teams are all coming too late. Does it not? Like, all the realization that, okay, these guys have lost it have come at a time when, like, you wrote about for Monday, or I think you wrote it even Sunday night, you know, that you can pinpoint five games that the special teams may have cost the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah. There's, you know, if their special teams is average or above average, they're 10-3. They're 10-3, you know, or you say that, you know, they make two of them. I mean, okay, the New England miss, okay. The Seattle one, no, you can't. the okay, the punt return against the Rams, okay, you get, because that, you know, Justin Bethel got stuck in the eye. But the Minnesota touchdown, no. So you're looking at least two or three games, in a maximum of five, 2 to 3 games. And you know, and we're going to talk a little bit this about this after that when you talk about Bruce Arians, some of the things they commented. I think in an effort to of loyalty, because of the success that they've seen them have, they are, and because of the success they had trying to keep the gang together, the team together, to be that they're holding on. They know what they've seen, so they know that they're capable of it, and so they're just being little. They're being a little too loyal for too long. Catanzaro being a young kicker, you know, they've seen what he can do, how good he can be, but he's apparently a little bit of a head case, a little bit this year. You can tell it's in his head. It's in his head. Butler, whatever the case is, the crazy loyalty to him. It's just, I think it's a notion of one of the things that they preach within the locker room, in the coaching staff, is that of loyalty. And they're just, the loyalty is outweighing just a little bit the on-field performance when they should be moving on. I mean, how many times have we seen teams over the years just swap out kickers? I mean, worst case scenario, you know, they let Catanzaro go. Okay, we're going to bring someone else in. They re-sign Catanzaro in the offseason, or just, they just burn through kickers. I mean, because kickers, when they're kicking like Catman is right now, you said it, they're a dime a dozen. You can get any kicker who can somewhat consistently hit kicks, field goals. Butler, yeah, exactly. I don't know. That Butler does, it's just inexplicable.
But it's not, though, because you kind of hit it earlier. Like, you know, what rash moves has Bruce Arians made since he took over? Like, look back. Palmer was legitimately bad at the beginning of 2013, and he never wavered. He brought Rashard Mendenhall and put him back in 2013 when he got over his injuries, despite the fact that it was clear that Andre Ellington was better. Andre Ellington comes out, struggles. He keeps giving him the ball. He doesn't care. I mean, there's examples every year that's just Bruce Arians. Like, he believes, and it's to a fault at times, but he believes in his evaluations of players. And, you know, again, that's not a bad thing, but again, at times it's to a fault, and it ends right up costing him. And it hasn't before. That's the thing. It hasn't. I mean, you can look back at the Carolina game and go, golly, you know, believing in Palmer, that cost him the game. But it was also the same reason they went 13-3. You know, I said I didn't think that they could win with the way they played. And I said, you know, you got the best year of Carson Palmer in his career. You can't expect that again. And it still wasn't good enough to win a Super Bowl. So, you know, make an adjustment. But again, that's not Bruce Arians. He's not going to make an adjustment. Like, he's not going to change his stripes for better or worse. And, you know, when it's working, it's 100% okay. When it's not working, it's puzzling and frustrating and all of those things. But it is what makes Bruce Arians Bruce Arians.
Right. And it's part of what makes him a great coach, because his players trust him, because, you know, with very few exceptions, he doesn't just go by the seat of his pants or whether the change of the wind, he's changing, you know. When he went with Ted Larson, he went with Ted Larson. We've seen how he's soured on players. We've seen this. It isn't necessarily because of play on the field. It's because of availability. Justin Bethel, the comments that he said, and we're going to talk a little bit, I think, you know, his lack of progress is due much in part of with the injury that he suffered and his inability to work through that. You saw them sour on Jonathan Cooper, who was always hurt. Ryan Williams soured on him because he wasn't able to practice. And it's the guys with the workmanlike mentality. You even saw it a little bit in the last couple of weeks with Tyrann Mathieu, just a little bit. You know, if you work really hard in practice, then Arians will fight for you. You wonder, like, wait, what? Why? Why do you continue to run Ted Larson out there on that line? You know, Cooper's on the bench. He's not better than Larson, which apparently he was. It's, you know, that's just one of the things. Going to the game, back to the game, the coverage. So we got the turnovers. I mean, the turnovers, we can chalk that up, can't we? Mostly, we can chalk that up to the weather. The first interception, the ball was a little high. Fitz normally catches it. He didn't. Palmer was getting hit. You know, he had a guy in his face when he made the throw. The fumbles, David Johnson, who, you know, he's had some fumbles, but that was a wet ball fumble. I mean, but the coverage, my goodness, that issue that we, the whole problem of the who's going to be the second cornerback other than Patrick Peterson continues to be a problem. You know, Marcus Cooper got hurt, so they were sent out Justin Bethel, and Bethel was bad. Tyvon Branch, you know, got beat a couple of times, missed tackles. You know, it's kind of the same thing. And then the offensive line protection, you know, DJ had been playing well, but, you know, AJ Shipley wasn't great. Ulrich John was a turnstile. I mean, what can you expect, really? But it's the same issues over and over again. The question of the offensive line, the question of coverage, it's all the same stuff. Special teams, coverage outside of Patrick Peterson, and offensive line protecting Carson Palmer. You're on mute.
It's one of those things you're going to have to sit down, and I'll write about it eventually. Maybe when I'm in Chicago in my apartment in a blizzard by myself. And it's one of those things, and it was told to me by a guy I really respect as an evaluator, and it's not a knock, but you look at players and you put them in two designations. And now, you know, obviously there are exceptions to everything, but you put them in two designations. Are they an elevator or are they elevated? And I've always looked at Carson Palmer as somebody that's elevated by the play around him. He's not in the same class as Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, you know, these guys that you look at what they do every – look at what Aaron Rodgers did last year against the Arizona Cardinals in the playoff game with Jeff Janis and James Jones as his only wide receiving targets. And, you know, you go – could if you swap quarterbacks in that game, what team is better? And I think the Cardinals with an Aaron Rodgers win by four touchdowns, five touchdowns. That's just, again, that's my opinion. But so you look, you go back and everybody's saying, well, you know, Palmer's this and that are letting him down. Well, no, this is what happens when he doesn't have guys to, I don't want to say carry him because he's not being carried, but you don't have guys that can elevate his play. So you have, you know, you have a great running back in David Johnson who's doing a great job, but, you know, he can only do so much, especially, you know, with the play calling, let's just be honest. You have a Larry Fitzgerald who's doing a great job, but then from there, you've had splashes of Jermaine Gresham and J.J. Nelson, Michael Floyd, John Brown, really been completely irrelevant this year. It's unfortunate. Nothing anybody can do about it. The offensive line has been a disaster. You don't want to say he needs a perfect situation, but you look at last year, and you look at, you know, the offensive line, despite the Ted Larson, Lyleson line grouping, was basically the same offensive line for the whole year. The receivers were all healthy the whole year. The only real change came at running back from Chris Johnson to David Johnson. And, you know, I think everybody can agree that was an upgrade. And Palmer put up the best season of his career. And it's, like I said earlier, it still wasn't good enough. And so you look at it and you say, okay, how do you elevate that from there? I don't know if you can. And that's where the issue comes in then is, you know, you look at what players you have and which players are going to elevate those around them. And that's kind of the conundrum they're in right now. When you look at it, like you said, they don't have anybody. They have Patrick Peterson, and literally every time they move Patrick Peterson onto a receiver, they immediately just go to another receiver. So who, Kenny Stills takes a deep touchdown. They put Peterson on Kenny Stills a couple snaps. Does Kenny Stills see the ball again? No. You know, they move, and then all of a sudden they can't cover Jarvis Landry, so now Peterson's on Jarvis Landry, and then they have to move him to Devontae Parker. And, you know, so you're asking one guy to be able to cover every receiver, and that just doesn't work, you know. And we've talked about the Chandler Jones conundrum that he is. When the calendar turns to November, his play all of a sudden is – I mean, what would you call it? Average? It's probably below average, if we're being completely honest.
Yeah, he wears out or something.
And his dive in production has coincided directly with whose dive in production? Marcus Golden. Marcus Golden's a non-factor every week, ever since Chandler Jones has become a non-factor. And so you look at the team, the construction, and everything. And like you said, it's one of those things. They have these holes in the construction of the team, but they also have these holes in what they believe they were as a team. And that's, you know, that comes back to self-scouting and understanding who your players are and what they are. Like, you can't get upset about a John Brown thing, right? Like, there's literally nothing anybody can do about that. But you look at the big extension of Tyrann Mathieu, the signing of Tyvon Branch, and the signing of Evan Mathis. And you look at those and you go, okay, Evan Mathis was coming off two ankle surgeries. He's a fantastic player when he's on the field, but can he get on the field? Tyvon Branch literally has never been healthy in his career. And you're putting the eggs in the Tyvon Branch is going to be able to hold down the Tyrann Mathieu role until Tyrann Mathieu is healthy.
And it just Mathieu never got healthy. And
exactly. And so it just, everything, it's one of those weird seasons where almost everything that they tried to do just didn't work. And it's just, but if you want to find a silver lining and all of that, they're what, four of their losses have been close games, right? And, there, like you said,
and it doesn't even come down to the offense or defense. It comes down to they were
special teams
at special teams. So you can be good and solid, but you can't really be bad in one side of the ball. If you're going to be a section, you can't be bad on any particular phase. And that's the thing, special teams, they've just been bad.
Well, and somebody wrote about it today on Revenge of the Birds. In the comment section, they said, you know, you watch every other team in the NFL, and especially when they play the Cardinals. What does every other team in the NFL do on kickoffs?
Kick it short.
They kick it short. Return the ball. We dare you. What do the Cardinals do on, I would say, 96% of the kickoffs, if not more? They just kicked the ball out of the back of the end zone. Like, you could literally just have Chandler Catanzaro out there and nobody else. And he's going to, like I said, 96% of the time kick the ball out of the back of the end zone. it's just simple things like that. Like, why are they not one of the teams that are trying to force the other team to return the ball and set up shorter field position? Just, you know, simple, silly things like that, like you said, have been missing this year. They for whatever reason, even though literally every person that watched it during training camp and preseason saw that the Andre Ellington experiment as a return man was going to go horribly wrong, they stuck with it. And we talked about that earlier with Bruce Arians. That's just his philosophy. I believe in you, Ellington. You're going to do this. And he's going to leave it there until what? Well, until it's a complete failure. And, you know, and he's proven to the point where he's having to start on offense at the 9, the 12 every time because his return man can't do anything.
Yeah. So, yeah, let's finish with that. And that game's over. Let's start talking about, so next up on Rise of Seaway, we're going to talk about Bruce Arians and some comments that he made, specifically about special teams and a couple of players. We're going to talk about some roster moves. There's been some changes on the roster, finally. And then we'll go with there, coming back next on the Rise of Sea Red show. We're back on Rise of Sea Red. And, well, let's talk Arians. Main thing, couple of big ones. One, he drew a line in the sand with Amos Jones. Special teams problems, well documented, they're bad. Cost them. You can point to quite clearly without drawing. I mean, for the most part, it cost them 5 wins. You know, and if they're okay, you know, you can maybe bring that down 3 wins. But essentially, their season has been obliterated because of bad special teams play, and the fact that they haven't had really good special teams play ever since the Cardinals got here. The question has been, well, isn't that a coaching thing, Amos Jones? Bruce Arians came out very clearly and said, it's not the coaching. I see him work his tail off. He's not getting fired. He's not the one kicking and punting. He's not missing the snaps. Those are the players. And so if we're going to fire him, we're going to fire me because it's the players that I got out there. So basically said, we're not changing the coaching staff. It's not happening. Got a couple of takes on that. Just give us your thoughts, you know, on that, the absurdity of it, and I'll give the perspectives we were talking off the air as to why Arians is doing this.
I think the absurdity of it is, again, loyalty to a fault. It's one thing if it's 1 year, for instance, if fans wanted Larry Zerline gone because the offensive line struggled this year, I would think that was odd. But I would say that Bruce Arians' fight for that would be welcomed, actually. Like, hey, like, I'm not going to bail on my guys because of one bad season. But as you just pointed out, this is year 3 of a continuation of poor special teams play. And again, my thing is, if you're going to blame the players, which I am completely fine with, I really am, you also have to blame the evaluator of the players. So who was doing the evaluating of special teams? Well, I'm pretty sure I read in the offseason, and I'll look.
There was a comment. BA said, "If you want to make this roster, you need Amos to love you."
Exactly, and so that means Amos Jones makes the decisions on who is on special teams. That's what I took from that. Is that, I mean,
yeah, the core special teamers. That sounds like that's Amos's decision.
And so, you know, you look at, like I said earlier, you look at the long snapper. They clearly made the wrong decision when they cut him after 3 games. Their obsession with Drew Butler, their undying loyalty for some reason. And I don't even really put this Miami game on there. That was just a abhorrid condition to play football in. But, you know, like you said earlier, there's other games where this was an issue as well. So I think that is where my misunderstanding with Arians comes in. There's loyalty that's good, and then there's stubbornness as opposed to loyalty. Like, no, this isn't going to change. And it's like, well, it hasn't changed, and that's why everybody believes it should change.
And for me, I mean, you look at the situation, at least this year, you look at the return game, the return game's always been bad. They haven't had a good punt returner since Patrick Peterson, his rookie year. He really hasn't been good since. Ted Ginn had moments. He was bad. Basically, the return game's been terrible. The punt game, not so much. The kicking game was good for 2 years. This season, injuries have been an issue. They've been a big issue. You know, Pro Bowl special teamer Justin Bethel, he hasn't been all right. He hasn't been right all year. He's had flashes, but he hasn't been right all year. They lost Alani Fua, Ifani Moma, Jerron Brown. These are core special teams players. Alex Okafor for a time, Kareem Martin for several weeks. And what they weren't getting were the guys behind them stepping up. If you look at, okay, if we're gonna blame Amos Jones, we're gonna fire Amos Jones. But does Amos Jones do they punt better? Do they make kicks? Do they hold better? Do they cover better without Amos? That's where you run into the thing. And we were talking about this off the show. This is off the air. This is where I see Bruce Arians, and I can appreciate this. One, how many times do we see in the NFL where a coordinator or an assistant becomes the sacrificial lamb for the coach, that they fire someone simply because someone needs to be fired? Not for any reason, but the thing that they show fans is to show that they're doing something. I've always found that absurd. You need to fire someone to show the fans that you're doing something. But Arians isn't going to do that. And there's a reason why. Let's go back to his history in Pittsburgh. Mike Tomlin, clearly, unless he was flat out lying to Bruce before the firing, said, I'm going to get you your money, I'm going to get you your bread, is what he said. So he had full intentions on getting Arians his extension, getting him a raise, and then came back and said, no, you don't have a job. That was clearly, unless it was a flat out lie, that was management drawing a line. You can't bring back Bruce. And Tomlin took his job over Bruce. And so that issue of loyalty to his staff is critical. He's not going to fire Amos Jones for the sake of firing Amos Jones to make other people happy. He's his guy. He sees him coach, that he's, you know, he's not doing his job badly in terms of preparation and his coaching and his, you know, what he's doing in practice. So why would he force him to be the guillotine? So no, I'm not going to do to him what was done to me. I can appreciate that, and I understand. And then you bring in some other special teams guy, you promote someone within, you bring some. How is that going to fix anything? Is Chandler Catanzaro suddenly going to make kicks? If they kept Drew, is Drew Butler going to punt better? Are they suddenly going to stay in their lanes? When, you know, what we saw most of the season is nobody on special teams stepped up. The depth guys, the next man up, didn't happen on special teams. And the quote BA was saying, normally it's like, oh, there's a guy. And now it's, oh, they scored a touchdown. So instead of the guys behind them getting an opportunity, stepping up and impressing the coaches, they're messing up. They're not doing what they're supposed to. And so I can see where it is. No, I can understand why you wouldn't fire Amos Jones, because it doesn't fix anything now. And I don't think necessarily it fixes anything moving forward, because you can – yes, they've been bad on special teams, but you can viably chalk that up to a lot of it, at least some of the special teams problems they've had, to injuries. Justin Bethel hasn't been great because he's been hurt. He's not the same player. You lose key guys. Again, like I said, you lose Alex Okafor for time, Kareem Martin, Ifani Moma, Jerron Brown, Alani Fowler. Those are big guys that they're losing. So, yeah, I get that. And I appreciate that. Will it cost Arians his job at some point? It might. Luckily, I think between Bruce Arians and Steve Keim, they have a really good relationship. And so there's, I think it'll come to that Bruce Arians won't get fired over it. But he's old enough now. It's like if they're gonna insist that there's a change in the staff, it's like, okay, I'm gonna retire and you're gonna replace all the staff.
Yeah, I don't think he's looking for that. And the thing is, like I said, the thing is, I want to know who's evaluating the talent and missing on these evaluations. And that's, I think, more important to me than the coaching up players. Because, like you said, there's a lot of injuries. Larry Zerline, that's why I said, like, if you went at Larry Zerline, I'd be like, eh. I mean, you really going to blame this guy for having to coach up John Wetzel and Ehrlich John. And A.Q. Shipley. Like, I mean, so, but I think also the drawing of the line in the sand is an interesting move by Arians, because I think it does show a disconnect maybe to what people think the relationship is between Arians and Keim. I think everybody thinks it's hunky-dory, but you got to remember the All or Nothing was filmed while they were having the best year in franchise history. That's not reality. And so everything else that's occurring behind closed doors, how is it impacting how these guys, you know, go, and why would Arians need to go so far and have such bravado if he didn't feel like it was a legitimate thing that could be asked of him coming this offseason?
You know, and maybe that's not necessarily for me. I don't say necessarily that's a thing that's coming from the front office, but it is. I mean, he's savvy enough, and Steve Keim is savvy enough, and their media department is savvy enough to know those questions are coming. And especially since you've had reporters asking about the coaching over a couple of weeks, Arians basically said, no, we're not changing staff. It's not Amos's fault. And maybe he, you know, we think of it this side. Maybe he can say that because he knows that, well, one, he has a leverage. One, two, that's a conversation he's already had with Steve. And that's not on the table. That's not expected. And since it's not up for discussion, he's just making it very clear to the media, the message out there, I'm not firing Amos. And so there, to me, that, you know, there's that aspect to it. But
yeah, and I don't, like you said, like, it's not going to improve anything right now. But you know, if it doesn't get better, it's going to become an issue, and it will. I think all of us agree, like, that nobody wants to see that. Like, nobody wants it to actually become an issue.
Right. Exactly. Now, another comment that he makes was, there was a couple things that came up when he was on SiriusXM NFL radio. You know, he talked about, but we'll talk about it in a second, but he talked about Justin Bethel. He's satisfied. He's always his progress. He hasn't progressed. Is he a work in progress? And he says he's a failure in progress. Very strong words about Justin Bethel. Very interesting considering what their expectations. And I think that's as a result of expectations. And it's very unfortunate because of all the high praises they gave Bethel for 2 years. That foot injury has really been the issue. And I think that's the part that's frustrated Arians, that Arians and Keim, both of them, it has to be frustrating because their quarterback plans after last year, they were always going to turn it over to Justin Bethel. That was the plan all along. That's why they, you know, they didn't target any names in free agency. The guys that they were looking at were nickel guys or guys that could play, you know, basically a Jerrod Powers, but probably a little bit less. That's why they were able to let Jerrod Powers walk. They're like, okay, Jerrod's done. He's been great. Now we're going to let him go because Justin's up. And then he gets hurt in the offseason. He has the foot surgery, and then he aggravates it, and he misses all of the offseason, and that's where the issue has been. He never got right physically. And so he never could progress. And Arians even said as much. He's a failure in progress, but he points to he wasn't able to make the next step, take the next step, because in the offseason he didn't get any reps. No reps at all because of that foot injury. And then he re-injured it again. And he's dealing with the foot injury all season. And so they were scrambling. They drafted a cornerback thinking – they drafted Brandon Williams and Harlan Miller thinking, okay, we've got a year or two before they need to play. But then they had to play. And then they bring in Mike Jenkins, and he gets hurt. And they bring in Alan Ball, and he's no good. And so I think more than anything, it's just the frustration of the fact that their plans were for Justin Bethel to be fine. And then the injury came, and he's not been able to make the progress that was necessary. And so all the problems have been because of that. Brandon Williams to Mike Jenkins. And at least Marcus Cooper for some of the season has been solid. But then he gets hurt, and then you go back to Bethel, you go back to Williams, and then you've got some of the same issues. You know, he'll play, he's inconsistent. There'll be some plays that he looks good, and then others he just gets beat.
Well, and I go back to the idea of self-scouting, and I get that the injury is an issue, but I think it's also a convenient excuse too to why Bethel hasn't taken the next step and said, well, you know, he didn't get to do this and that in the off season, as opposed to, like, we just missed on the evaluation. Like, we thought he would take the next step and he just hasn't. And so I think, again, that plays a big part. You want to dog on a guy that was, you know, the best special teams player in the NFL because you thought he could become an every down cornerback. And it's not like he's out there not trying. Maybe he's just not good enough. Maybe, you know, we talked about this with Brandon Williams, and that was going to be the hard part for Williams. Wasn't going to be, you know, the athleticism and things of that nature. It was going to be learning the traits of a cornerback. And I think it's the same thing with Bethel. You can't learn, you know, the intuition to play corner. So you either have it or you don't. Now, for Bethel, he gets scared a lot. I mean, you watch it out there. He's so afraid of getting beat deep after the Jeff Janis thing last year that he lets everything eat him up in yardage. And because he's basically giving somebody a 20-yard cushion on every play, because he doesn't want to get beat deep again. And so you look at that and you look
and then he gets beat deep.
Yeah. And then you look at the comments. You know, I agree. He's been a disappointment in that sense, but I go back to the idea of you have to be able to scout your own players to see what you have. And if you miss scout your own players, then that's on you. That's not on the player. I mean, that's just the reality. So you hope that it was a combination of, like you said, Bethel being hurt all offseason and not having time. And you just hope it's not another instance where they just didn't do a good job of identifying what a player was that they already had under contract.
And then we have beyond that Bethel comment. Now you've got Michael Floyd. So let's talk a little bit about this Michael Floyd thing. And a terrible season has just gone to what could actually go worse. The worst happened. A guy who in college had a history of some alcohol issues, some alcohol run-ins, you know, comes home off the flight, goes out, drinks too much, drives home and falls asleep at the wheel, and he gets arrested for a DUI. There's a lot of guys, I mean, there are a lot of fans out there calling for his release. I mean, one, the situation is just dumb. That was just dumb. Floyd, who is having a very disappointing season already, and then it just looks even worse. Okay, they lost, you know, he's having a terrible year, and then they lose the game, essentially ending their season for the playoffs. So what does he go do? He goes and drinks his problems away and then gets in his car and falls asleep at the wheel. So he's got the DUI arrest. A lot of people calling for his release. And I don't expect it. One, and two, there's really, they really don't have the precedent for that. If you look at, you know, Bobby Massey, they didn't cut him. Bobby Massey was kind of an odd situation. But they didn't cut him. In fact, they tried to re-sign him last year. They tried to bring him back. In fact, at the last minute, they kind of upped their offer trying to bring him back, I guess, to compete with Humphreys, DJ Humphreys, and didn't. John Abraham, while they were disappointed in the arrest in Atlanta, they didn't cut him. He eventually retired, and they know his contract expired, and then they didn't bring him back. We look at DC Jefferson, you know, back in 2013, and even then, they had the chance to say, no, it was related to this arrest. We don't, you know, especially if, you know, you're barely on the team, you can't do that. And they were very clear. Bruce Arians said, no, didn't have to anything to do with the arrest. So he gets arrested for DUI after the bye week, and then he gets cut. And even then, they could have made a statement. They didn't. They could have made a statement. This is what happens when you do this. And they didn't. So I don't see anything of that sort happening. Maybe he's suspended. They were even talking on the radio this morning of how this might actually increase the likelihood he returns, because his value is, you know, in the league probably is in the dumps.
Do they really want him back? I mean, that's my question. Like, do you want a guy that him, you can't haven't?
If you're paying him $3-4 million, you know, he's making $7 million this year. You know, he was probably looking for $11-15 million, but you know, you were paying Ted Ginn $3.5 million. If you could bring back Michael Floyd at $3 million, especially with the ceiling he has, I could see it, as long as, you know, as long as they hadn't like lost trust in him. I mean, after what happened last year, they still brought back Alex Okafor. You know, the whole pool incident on the bye week and the playoff bye, they brought him back, and he's had an important role this season. So, you know, maybe they do. I you know, if we're talking about the loyalty thing, I think they have seen what he can do. And if it's at the right price, I could see a possibility, even just as a one-year deal, so he gets a chance to do it again. He gets a do-over for a contract year. You know, maybe that's what they need. But that's a completely different thing. I don't know. I think basically in the public's eye, because of how bad he's been this year, add this off-the-field issue to it, I think it really has just – all the fans are done with him.
Yeah, and I mean, I wouldn't blame him. I just – it's one of those things where you look at it and you don't know the whole situation other than he did something stupid. I mean, there's nothing more to it. He did something stupid. Thank goodness it didn't result in anybody getting hurt, including himself. Like you said, he's had the issue at Notre Dame before. You wonder how much of it has to do with just the overall – terribleness of his play of the season, the frustration of the season, you know, what friends or what teammates was he out with, you know, just little things like that. But overall, I go back to what I said earlier, and that is, everybody can say all they want that, oh, look at what he did in this season. But, or, you know, in 2015. But my question is always simply, why are we to believe that who, you know, Michael Floyd was in 2015 is who he is going to be in 2017, and not who he was in 2016 is who he's going to be? And so that's where, you know, my question comes in with, like, a Michael Floyd. I don't know if they re-sign him anyways, because I think Arians is kind of done with him at this point, like after this happened, because, you know, he's really trusted and leaned on Floyd to break out. He's given him all these opportunities, and that dude just keeps kind of shooting himself in the foot.
Exactly. So let's come back next second being on the Rise Up C-Red Show. Let's talk a little bit about playoffs. Playoffs! Cardinals, believe it or not, are not eliminated. They're still technically in it. So let's, even though we both have declared their season over, let's see. Because there are still fans who believe. I mean, it's possible. So we'll talk about their possibility for the playoffs, and we'll look ahead to the Saints this weekend. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. Playoff talk. We can still talk about it. We're not full in draft season yet, even though it's all but set that they're done for the playoffs. And BA told the players that he didn't sugarcoat it. He said, just being real, I wouldn't expect anything other than disappointment, but you're not going to sugarcoat 8-7-1. And that's the best they can do. It might get you in, but probably not. But if you look at it, they're still considered in the hunt. They're still 10th. They didn't lose any ground. As it is, if they win out, they can still do that. They can go 8-7-1. They could still technically win the division, although it would require Seattle to lose out. And they have 3 division games left, and so they've got 2 bad teams. And if you want to consider the Cardinals not very good, so they've got 3 games that they should win. They would also require either Atlanta or Tampa Bay to lose out, both of them sitting at 8-5. If one of them loses out and goes to 8-8, the Cardinals could pass them. And then on top of that, the combination of Washington, Minnesota, and Green Bay all have to go. They can win no more than 1 game over their final 3 games. But the Cardinals still in it, right? Or am I just, toying with everyone?
I mean, they're still in it. It starts on Thursday. Basically, if Seattle wins, it's over. I mean, that's the way you have to look at it right now. If Seattle wins, it's over. Because you have to figure that every team's going to win at least 1 game. And that the Cardinals have to go undefeated. So the worst part of this would probably, possibly, likely be if this came down to, 2013 again. But this time it's the Cardinals need the San Francisco 49ers to beat the Seattle Seahawks for the Cardinals playoff lives. I just don't think it gets to that point. What makes us, without saying, look at what they've done before, what makes us think that this 2016 version of the Arizona Cardinals are going to go up to Seattle and win a football game? That more than anything is the question. How many road games have they won this year? Just the one?
Just San Francisco. Just one. Just the San Fran game. That's the only one.
They didn't, look great out after or in the first half in that one. I mean, they were down, and Calais Campbell kind of saved their bacon on that one. And so you look at it, and you wait, and you see. But I mean, they have to beat New Orleans this week, and as bad as New Orleans is on the road, Arizona plays in a dome, so that, that kind of takes away half of the badness of Drew Brees on the road. So now he's, 75% of his normal self instead of 50%. Then they have to go to Seattle. I mean, what evidence is there?
Seattle's been bad. Other than the fact that Seattle's looked like garbage 2 out of the last 3 weeks. So it gives you a little bit of hope.
Oh, it does. But again, Seattle has to lose to LA first. And even with Jeff Fisher finally fired, do we really expect Los Angeles to come out, guns blazing and win that football game? I mean, I don't. Do you? Like, not looking at it from a Cardinals perspective of we really want them to,
Well, he did. Aside from the Cardinals winning, these are the teams that the Cardinals have to root for. They need to root for Los Angeles to win on the road in Seattle, which that's actually the most likely of the scenarios because some reason the Rams – the Rams are Seattle's kryptonite. Then you've got to root for the Colts in Minnesota.
Which I could see happening.
San Francisco in Atlanta.
That's never going to happen.
Or – Dallas at home against the Bucks. You could go with at least you can go with the Bucks or the Falcons. One of them needs to lose out. And then you've got to root for the Panthers.
And who are they playing? I don't even know.
Panthers are playing Washington in Washington. And then you've got to go for you have to root for the Bears. You have to root for the Bears playing Green Bay. Come on, Matt Barkley, help us out.
Yeah, the Matt Barkley led Bears. Yeah, that, I mean that's just a
it's tough. Hopeless. Sorry, fans, it's hopeless.
Well, and it's not even being a Debbie Downer or anything like that. It's just you look at it realistically, like you said, everybody they need to win outside of Tampa Bay, all of the teams they need to lose, I should say, are playing teams that are inferior, and Minnesota. So you could get a Minnesota-Tampa Bay combination platter loss, but then, you know, you still have Washington, you still have Green Bay.
Looking really good.
Yeah. I think when it all's said and done, your six NFC teams are going to be obviously Dallas, Detroit, Seattle, and Atlanta. And then I think your wild cards are the Giants and the Packers, and nobody's going to want to play the Packers. I mean, because they're going to go from 6-6 to 10-6, and nobody's going to want to play them.
Yep. So let's look ahead to – so yeah, I mean, obviously as a fan, if you're still – there's definitely still stuff to cheer for. Obviously, absolutely. The Cardinals aren't complete. So you can root for the Cardinals to win because you like the team to win. So you don't need to completely bail on them. And there's still interest, so you can root against teams because there's still a possibility. So now it's not just in a – I heard from one of my buddies on Twitter – you know, especially with the roster move. So I forgot to talk about the roster moves. The Cardinals did make some roster moves. Guess what? Drew Butler's not on the team. Yay! Matt Weil is now the punter. Apparently can hold the ball well enough to earn a spot on the roster. Zach Dyser promoted to the active.
Yeah. Somebody asked me, though. Do you – and I don't know, so you may know. Do you think Zach Dyser was promoted to be the holder?
I had that question. I don't think so. Because a couple of the reporters around it, I think it had to do with the Dolphins. Because Adam Gase knows Zach Dysart, and now with Ryan Tannehill done, so they need a backup behind Matt Moore. Zach Dysart could be that guy, and so they promoted him likely to keep him off of Miami's roster. Although that's a possibility. I mean, that's really a possibility. Daniel Buchanan's done for this. Oh, Tyvon Branch is done. Ulrich John is gone. So now we got C.O. Moore starting. I'm not sure what it's going to look. Hopefully Tyrann Mathieu can come back and play in the slot. And then the offensive line at right tackle, that looks like a mystery. Maybe it'll be John Wetzel at right tackle, but with D.J. Humphrey in the concussion protocol, hopefully he comes back so that Wetzel can play right tackle. Otherwise, we're looking at somebody off the street or Givens Price or Earl Watford.
Like, maybe I'm completely lost, but why is the Cole Toner at guard and Earl Watford at right tackle not a thing that's been discussed? Like, I feel like it.
Toner's not ready. I mean, this is what Toner's not ready for NFL play. I'm certain that's what it is. They're not ready for him. Watford at right tackle is a possibility, but I think, you know, if they're. You could put Watford at right tackle, and you could put John Wetzel at right guard, but obviously they weren't thrilled with him, which is why they put Watford back there again. Maybe Taylor Boggs. Yeah, it's just a mess. So, yeah, let's just not dwell on that. But, yeah, so, you know, C.O. Moore, who was cut because he was terrible in Indy, now apparently made some plays, but now they're going to have two real linebackers playing linebacker now. So that's going to be interesting to see. Two real linebackers playing linebacker. So let's look ahead to the Saints. They're going to last a little bit, talk about the Saints game. What do we see moving forward, especially with the possibility Michael Floyd might be suspended? Obviously, the Saints, you know, the Saints are a layup line. They can't stop anybody. They're -5 in the turnover ratio.
You know, but season. We said that a couple times, and that's kind of bit us in the butt.
We're playing at home, though, so there's something to that. The issue that we're going to run across is they do have lots of targets, and Patrick Peterson can take care of one of them. Yeah. But they've got Michael Thomas, who's got 69 catches. You got Brandon Cooks with 63. You got Willie Snead with 59. Then you got Kobe Fleener at tight end with 43. I don't know what they're going to do about covering the running backs. Mark Ingram tore them apart. And now you don't have Daniel Buchanan, so you're going to be asking CeeLo Moore and Kevin Minter to handle coverage with the running backs come out of the backfield, neither one of them, which are good in coverage, and CeeLo Moore, who's, you know, I mean, worse than Kevin Minter from what I've been told. He's worse than Kevin Minter in coverage. So,
oh, man, it's going to be so much fun.
And so you've got wide receiver two, wide receiver three, that's going to be an issue because Matthew in the slot hasn't done anything yet. Cornerback two, you know, Cooper is he's okay. But if he's not playing, then you've got the Brandon Williams, Justin Bethel combination to, you know, get beat by those guys. And can the Cardinals score enough points? That's the question. And if they can they score enough points against that defense, and can they protect Carson Palmer with, you know, they were already playing with a makeshift line, and that makeshift line now has become chickens, you know, it's not just chicken wire and duct tape. It's just chicken wire.
And a lot of these players aren't even real people, if we're being completely honest.
Like, remember, we lost Ulrich John. He wasn't a real person. What's an Ulrich?
But you look at this and you just, I mean, it's sad and it's, but it's laughable, right? Like, it's laughable at the same time.
It's funny sad. It's funny sad. It's laughs so you don't cry.
Well, and it's one of those things that we'll talk about in the off season, once we get to the off season, that it's going to be, you know, was this a condemnation of the version of the Arizona Cardinals, or was this just a speed bump to get to, you know, the ultimate goal? But anyways, if you can't score points on this New Orleans Saints team, then there really is not much to discuss moving forward about the viability of this offense and this offense. Or if they don't try to run the ball, and if they don't utilize David Johnson, and if this is another let's let Carson Palmer throw the ball around, and then it happens again where, you know, they just aren't very good, and they end up in a close game against a team that, again, on paper, you know, they should be superior to. Now, maybe not with all the injuries, let's be fair there, but you know, I think you look at it and you wonder at what point that this season is just chalked up to a lost season, and that there is no kind of going back. And I don't want that to be this week. I mean, you know, I'm as much of a draft fan as there is. And, you know, I argue that amongst Arizona Cardinals fans, I'm the biggest of draft fans, but I still don't want to see my favorite team lose. Like, I don't want them to finish 5-10-1 on the season. I don't want them to lose to New Orleans at home to a very, I mean, if you read Canal Street Chronicles, the SB Nation site, the lament of mediocrity over there is, you know, that's the siren song right now, how mediocre this team is, and where do they go? And is it time? Is it time for the Peyton and Breeze era to end? And you lose to that team, you know, and you just, you know, at that point you're going to shake your head. So maybe that's why I have a hard time seeing the Cardinals losing this game, because I just don't want to believe it still, right? Like, right. I still don't want to believe that this team is just what they actually are, and that's probably just a bad football team in 2016. Not a bad football team. Just in 2016, they were a bad football team.
And, you know, aside from the playoffs, obviously the Cardinals still have enough to, like, all these last three games are games that they shouldn't give up on. I mean, this is their home finale. I mean, if there are players giving up on this season, I mean, aside from the playoffs, if there are players who can't get up and motivated to play in their last home game of the season, there's something wrong. One. Two, the other two games that are left are division games. Those are emotional games. They're teams that you don't like. I mean, they hate Seattle. I mean, they respect Seattle, but they hate Seattle. They hate the success that they're the team. They're the older brother that they want to beat. And they finally got past a season ago, but then, you know, older brother came back and beat the crap out of them. And then the Rams already beat them in their home turf. They want to return the favor. So, I mean, at least the fight, if the fight's not there in these three games, then we've got a real problem. And then there need to be wholesale changes on the team. But because this team, they're still definitely a lot to fight for, even if they're not fighting for the playoffs, because you've got a home game. It's their last home game. You know, these guys know they have fans. They know, they understand fans pay money to watch them. So they want to look good. They don't want to let fans down. So if they can't be up for this game, then there's some. That's where Steve Keim said, if these the players who don't compete, they won't be on the team next year. And maybe that was just the message they were just sending ahead of time, but not necessarily pointed at anyone in particular. But when I heard that for the first time, I'm thinking, who's he talking about? Who's he talking about? But yeah, I mean, there are some challenges against this Saints team, because the one thing that nobody's been able to do, nobody's sacking Drew Brees. They've only given up 20 sacks all year, so their offensive line has been fantastic. You know, Mark Ingram has played well this season. He's averaging 5 yards a carry. Timmy Hightower averaging over 4 yards a carry. You know, remember Timmy Hightower from nearly 10 years ago, and he's looking good. So the running game's there. They're getting lots of production from everybody in the passing game. It's just defensively. And even defensively, you have to wonder, because they've got guys who can get the quarter, get to Carson Palmer. They've gotten in. Nobody is killing it. And they don't have a lot of sacks as a team. But there's definitely talent there between – you've got Cameron Jordan. You've got Nick Fairley on the inside. You've got Sheldon Rankins. And you got Daniel Ellerbe. And especially when you've got a makeshift interior line and you've got issues at right tackle. I mean, if DJ can play a left tackle, comfortable. But the right side of the line at right guard and right tackle, that's going to be dicey. And so while they're bad defensively, there's the threat that if things could go badly.
And that's what you want to avoid. And I think that's what, you know, when we look at this, that's the whole thing, right? Like, don't become that team. Don't let this season, this what is a lost season, don't let that destroy what has been built the other three previous years.
And right. Keep the resolve there. Keep the resolve there so that you can bring it back. And then what you can do, you can chalk it up to injuries. You could chalk it up to a couple of things bouncing the wrong way, and then injuries has kept you from the ultimate goal.
Right, but if you finish 5-10-1 and you have infighting and you have guys playing for themselves, then you're talking a completely different thing. And you're talking about a team that's not just a lost season, but is this a lost cause? And I don't think it is. I really don't. But again, you and I have been slightly too optimistic all season long when it comes to this team. So who knows? I mean,
to a fault.
Who knows?
So I don't know what to think about.
I'm picking them to win the game this week, so whatever. I don't care.
Yeah, why not? Why not? We're going to pick them to win, because New Orleans, and especially New Orleans has been bad recently too. So that's the other part to it. New Orleans just hasn't been good recently.
No.
So there's that. All right, and I think that's enough. If there's those of you still listen, thanks. I mean, this was I'm sure this was a tough one to get through, because there's not a whole lot of positive to go through, but rest assured we will get something. You know, if the season keeps going wrong, we will get to the point where we can start looking to the future, and that's always fun. That's, you know, off-season talk, that's always fun. We can say who's going to stay, who's going to go, contracts out there, and there's going to be another big jump in the salary cap, so money's going to be flying around everywhere. Then there's the draft, and if the Cardinals keep doing badly, then they'll have a high draft pick. So there's stuff to talk about. But hopefully we're talking about a win next week. Hopefully we're talking about a win over the Saints. You know, maybe things have gone their way. Maybe some things have gone their way, and they're still in the hunt. You know, it'd be kind of nice. They're still in the hunt. We can kind of cling to that hope next week, but that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Show, the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Reed. You can find us all over the internet, hopefully. You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, on Facebook at Rise Up Sea Red, also on Twitter, Rise Up Sea Red, and also featured on our own websites, RevengeOfTheBirds.com and CardsWire.com. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening, and go Cards!